Utiloy DDG, Project 1155, Frigat, a sub-brief. Our sources are rather limited this time. We only needed three main sources, globalsecurity.org, which provided the majority of today's information. We cross-checked that with Russian Defense Export, ROE, and naval technology.com. Between those three, we were able to filter out the facts and put them in the brief here. We also referenced the shipyards that built most of the Utiloys, the shipyard yantar.ru website. And we took photos from ausk.ru and from Twitter, Mr. Joseph H. Dempsey. Thank you to Joseph for providing some key information. Let's begin in 1970 at Servnoye Design Bureau in St. Petersburg, Russia. Russia has decided as a country that it's not going to build large ships like the Kirov. It just simply cannot continue to build these behemoth battleships. The Kirov isn't built yet, but it's in process of being designed, and it's just outrageously expensive. So what they've decided to do is follow the NATO model of building smaller specialized ships. So they're going to build an ASW destroyer called the Utiloy and complement that with Sovremeny class destroyers that will cover anti-air and have an anti-surface role. And these two destroyers, Sovremeny and Utiloy, will deploy together to cover all three domains of the battlefield in 1970s. And that's air, sea, and subsea. So they're going to build a deep sea, fast moving submarine hunter that's capable of detecting submarines at long range and attack them at long range outside their torpedo attack capability. Construction will begin in 1977 and last through 1999. Assembly takes place on two shipyards, Severnaya Verf and Yantar shipyards, both on the Baltic Sea. Severnaya Verf, also known as Shipyard 190, is in St. Petersburg, Russia, and is one of the oldest shipyards in the world. Established in 1890, it's been building ships for over a century. Today, it builds both military and civilian vessels. The primary export is fishing vessels for India and countries in the Southeast Asia region. It has 8 construction slips, a floating dry dock, and a new large vessel dry dock. The second shipyard is the one where most of today's ships will be constructed. Again, on the Baltic Sea, in Kaliningrad, Russia. That's a small piece of land wedged between Poland and Lithuania. Shipyard was founded after World War II in 1945. Also builds military and civilian ships. So what is the Utiloy? It is an 8,400-ton surface ship that's 536 feet long, over 25 feet wide, and has two combined gas turbine and gas turbine engines, one with a cruise and one with a boost on each shaft. They collectively produce 60,000 horsepower per shaft. It's a two-shafted ship with 5 blades at the end of each shaft, pushing it over 30 knots and has a range of over 5,000 miles before needing refuel. The crew is 220 men and officers. The primary weapon systems are focused on ASW warfare, and its primary anti-submarine weapon is the SSN-14 Silex. These are two box launchers, one port, one starboard, each with 4 of these Silex missiles in each one. And that is the rocket-propelled, airdropped torpedo that can go out to many miles, and we'll cover that in detail. It also has 8 VLS SAM launchers, shoots 64 SAN-9 Gauntlet missiles from those launchers. The original Utiloy has 2 dual-purpose 100mm cannons on the bow. It has 2 RBU 6000 ASW bombs and 8 53-centimeter waist torpedoes in quad launchers, port and starboard. For its sensors, it has a very capable top plate 3D air search radar complemented with a strut pair surface search radar, and that's its primary detection for anything above the water. Horse jaw and horse tail sonar is probably the best sonar to come out of the Soviet Union, and is still in use today. It's so good. So they have the horse jaw and horse tail. They have eyeball SSM targeting for the gauntlet missiles, cross sword SAM controls. They have the Bell Shroud and Bell Crown Intercept, that's ESMs, and the Bell Squat Jammers for self-defense. Those attempt to confuse incoming radar-guided missiles. They have PK-2 and PK-10 decoys, essentially chafe launchers, and the KA-27 Helix. They have hangers for 2 on board on the fantail. So let's begin with the first one, the first Utiloy. Utiloy is Russian for bold. The keel is laid in 1977. She's launched in 80 and commissioned at the end of the year. She's assigned to the Northern Fleet in 1981, and in 1983, she begins her first deployment to the Atlantic and the Med. In 1984, she deploys again and pulls into Cuba for a port visit. In 1988 to 90, she goes through a major overhaul at Kronstadt St. Petersburg. Kronstadt is a shipyard in St. Petersburg. It's there on the island right off the coast. In 1993, it's assigned to the Fleet Reserve due to manning shortage, because that was right after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and they didn't have enough sailors to man all of their ships. So this being the older of the Utiloids that are in service, they put her into Fleet Reserve. She's finally removed from the ship's list in 1997 and officially decommissioned in 2002. Kind of a petering end for such a unique, capable, first-in-class ship. So let's talk about the horse jaw sonar, also known as the Orion. The bow portion of it specifically is the Orion projector, and the platina is the tail, VDS, horse tail, that comes out the back. It is a LF active that has multiple modes with very long pulse lengths, some in excess of 45 seconds. This is a very early version of LPA, long pulse active. And they did not pioneer this, but they quickly adapted it and use it very effectively in shallow water. To describe horse jaw sonar to you would be difficult, but imagine insonifying the water for 45 seconds. And while you're insonifying this with a very specific frequency, you listen for any returns on any bearings from that frequency. So you're projecting it out 360 degrees or near 360. And you're listening if there's like an echo or a pulse. And that pulse doesn't look like a little blip on your screen like you imagine on a radar screen. It comes back as a vertical line that waterfalls down your display for 45 seconds. So it basically, a target that is detected by this horse jaw sonar lights up a sonar display, not just with a simple dot, but a vertical line that stands out from an otherwise quiet background. It's very, very good. It has a 16-mile range scale, and that's just an estimate for shallow water mode, and it is very effective inside 16 miles. It's LFMF passive, so it can just listen if it wants to, and when it does that, it can listen to a much higher range scale of frequencies. The Horsetail VDS sonar is both active and passive, and in deep water, it can take advantage of convergent zone, which gives it a 75-mile range. It can actually ping at a 75-mile range scale. We've heard that. It can track 16 targets at a time and has automated trackers like comparable sonar systems of the day. Top plate and strut pair radars. Top plate is a long-range air search radar. It's a 3D radar, meaning it gives you bearing, range, and altitude, which are the three things you need for an object in the air. The strut pair is simply a surface search radar, looks out to the horizon and a little bit beyond with beamforming tricks that they do. But it's a 2D, bearing and range only. This is the SSN-14 Silex. It's in the Snowstorm Launcher. That's the NATO name. The Russian call that box launcher the Metal or Metal. It was developed in 1969, entered service in the Russian Navy. It's on multiple ships, not just the Utiloi. It has a solid fuel rocket motor that propels the payload, which is the rocket on top with a little red nose, out to 90 kilometers if it's in anti-ship mode. And anti-ship mode is rarely deployed, rarely seen, but it is capable of hitting a ship with this type of rocket. But primarily, it carries a torpedo. And when it does, the torpedo is much heavier because the torpedo has, you know, fuel and a warhead, whereas the anti-ship mode is essentially just a bomb that's being carried by the rocket. So the heavier torpedo has a limited range of only 50 kilometers, which is still pretty long. It is nuclear capable. They can drop a nuclear bomb down to depths and detonate it and take out the submarine. That's how we expected them to use this in the Cold War, if it ever turned hot, is that they would simply have a small nuclear warhead enough to kill a submarine and rock the ship a little bit, but not do any damage to the ship. It can have a high explosive torpedo, and that would be the other payload. Other ASW weapons are those quad launchers I told you about. There's two of these, one on port, one on starboard side, near the rear end of the ship. They're 53 centimeters in diameter, 21 inches. They can carry the Type 53 and Type 65 ASW torpedoes. Torpedoes vary in capability, but 50 kilometer range at 50 knots is a pretty standard range for both of those. They have two RBU 6000s. The Uteloy 2 had an RBU 12,000. The number after RBU is the range in meters. So 6,000 would go 6,000 meters maximum. They can aim these higher to have a higher parabolic arc and bring that range into 5,000, 4,000, 3,000 if they want to. But the maximum range at the best, most efficient angle goes out to 6,000 yards. And in the case of the Uteloy 2, 12,000. RBU simply stands for rocket bomb unit, and each of the 12 bombs are 43 pounds of explosives. Naval guns. We have the two AK-100 dual-purpose cannons on the bow. These can fire 60 rounds a minute, and there's two of them. They can absolutely decimate a target quickly. Imagine getting hit with a 100-millimeter round every second if you're the target. They do have HE shells, so the HE shell carries approximately a 59-pound warhead on it, so you're being pounded with a 60-pound warhead every second until you're gone. This is a very effective gun against small ships. Very good for pirate duty. At the bottom here, we have the AK-630 close-in weapon system. We've seen this before on every other Soviet-era warship, and it's in service today, too. Fires a 30-millimeter shell. It has six barrels, hence the name AK-630. And it is radar-directed by the MR-123 system you see there on the right. This can be put in self-defense mode, which shoots down incoming weapons, and it can be in a surface-to-surface mode and take out small vessels. We've seen them use this off the coast of Somalia, destroying wooden pirate ships. It shreds a pirate ship. Anti-air weapons and fire control. So the SAN-9 Gauntlet Dagger missiles, they have eight launchers with eight missiles in each for a total of 64 right there on the bow in front of the dual-purpose guns. It has a 9-mile range, but it's highly lethal. So, yeah, it's very relatively short range. Again, this is not an anti-air destroyer, but you get within 9 miles of it, you're going to get one of these missiles at you. And they're very maneuverable. They're very difficult to defeat. The 3R95 fire control radar cross swords is right there, right behind the mast. It has a 28-mile range. They also carry the K-27 Helix. This replaced the K-25 Hormone in 1982. So they could have had the Hormone in the early years, but they quickly got the Helix in 1982. It's a twin-engine coaxial rotor. Removes the need for a tail rotor because the rotors spin in opposite directions, which is a very clever way of reducing anti-torque. It has a top speed of about 150 knots, has a range of about 500 miles. A long range for ASW helicopters is very important because they need to get away from the ship and have time on station and enough fuel to get back again. So naval variants include a surface search radar, ESM, sonar, and magnetic detection pods. They drop torpedoes, sonar buoys, and even ASW bombs, similar to the RBU. Here's the Kogag combined gas turbine and gas turbine setup. This is a very simplified drawing. It's a little more complex than this, but this is the public information picture that they have on the internet. So we're going to go with that for security reasons. There are two gas turbines per shaft. The gas turbines are very efficient. The cruise turbine specifically, it runs continuously while the ship is at sea and turning the propeller. And they have limited speed with that cruise turbine, and they can get, you know, have a very long range with that, 5,000 some miles. But whenever they need that high speed, they bring on that boost turbine, which provides an additional 45,000 horsepower, taking them from 15,000 to a total of 60,000 per shaft. When they're running both shafts, 120,000 shaft horsepower. This thing can get up and move when it wants to, but it's sucking gas at an unbelievable rate whenever it's doing this. And it greatly reduces its endurance. So normally you won't see the boost turbine unless they're actively prosecuting something. Okay, Vice Admiral Kulikov was the second of the Uteloys created. Her keel was laid in 77, commissioned in 81, and dry docked for repairs in 1991, where she sat for years. We didn't see her again until 2010. It is rumored that she had been planned for scrap, but made a return in 2010 despite that. In 2011, she did have a minor fire on board while she was in port, and we saw her testing a KA-52 helo. That's normally a land attack helo, but it was configured for a maritime role and tested in the Barents Sea, or the Baltic Sea, rather, in 2011. Vice Admiral Kulikov continues in 2012 deployed in an anti-piracy deployment off the Gulf of Aden and had a UK visit. So this is important to understand. In 2021 time, this recording, relations with the Soviet or the Russians are not as good as they used to be. Simple as 9 years ago, they were doing goodwill port visits in NATO countries. So things have changed a lot in the last 8 or 9 years. In 2014, she deployed to the Norwegian Sea. In 2016, she went to the Med. So a very active boat in the 2010s. In 2018, she sailed the Northern Sea Route. That's across the top of Russia over to the Pacific Fleet. From there, she spent a year in the Pacific. And in 2020, she came back around and came into the Med. So she's gone completely around Asia, Africa, Europe by this point. And in 2021, she returns to the Northern Fleet. A very successful, highly active surface ship. Marshal Velesevsky was laid down in 79 and commissioned in 83, assigned to the Northern Fleet in 84. She has multiple Northern Atlantic deployments in the 80s and 90s. In 1997, she was awarded for tracking a foreign submarine. It's not clear who she was tracking. I couldn't find any records of American submarines being tracked that year, but it might have been a NATO sub. It could have been, a sub in the Baltic. We don't know, or a Baltic region sub operating up there. But she did not sail again after 1997 and was removed from service in 2006. Kind of a sudden end to a rather successful ship. Admiral Zakharov, he was laid down in 81, commissioned in 83, awarded Best in Baltic Fleet in 1985. In 1987, transits to the Pacific via the Indian Ocean. So she's going all the way around Europe and Asia on the southern route. In 1988 to 89, she deploys to a North Korean port and to the Persian Gulf. So she's doing some visits all around the Asian coastline and then around into the Persian Gulf. In 1990-91, she deployed to the South China Sea, including port visits there. In February 1991, there's an explosion in the engine room, destroying one of the gas turbines and killing a sailor. That fire burned out of control for 30 hours, heavily damaging the engine room. In 1994, repairs were deemed too costly, and she's moved to a shipyard for disassembly. Admiral Spiridonov was laid down in 82, commissioned in 84. In 1985, he's assigned to the Pacific Fleet. In 1986, she does naval exercises off the Sea of Japan. In 1989, she's in the Persian Gulf doing some deployments. And during the 90s, she deploys several times to the Indian Ocean, where she does port visits in Africa, kind of showing the flag, you know, saying, hey, you know, we may be Russia up at the top of Asia, but we're capable of operating in the South Atlantic and then the Indian Ocean, and here we are. But she was decommissioned and scrapped in 2001. Admiral Tribbets. Admiral Tribbets was laid down in the 1980, commissioned in 1985, and assigned to the Pacific Fleet the following year. Deployed alongside Chinese and Indian fleets in the 1980s, because that was during the Cold War, before the collapse of the Soviet Union. They had really close ties with the Indians, especially. Chinese relations had been waning since the mid-50s and not improving. But they still had relationships and they deployed together. In 1992 and 93, she had a Persian Gulf deployment during a very tumultuous time. That's while the Soviet Union is collapsing, this ship is hundreds of miles away, deployed. I can only imagine what the sailors were thinking as they read the radio transcripts of the collapse of, you know, of Glasnost and everything. In 1994 to 2003, she's in dry dock for modernization. 9-10 year dry dock is not unheard of for a lot of these ships. In 2005, she's back at sea doing naval exercises with India, and this time instead of China, Japan. Active service in the Pacific Fleet continues today. Now, this ship could be at sea right now. Marshal Shaperhennikov. He was laid down in 1983. Commissioned in 85. As you can see, the early 80s are when most of these were built. In 1986, he's assigned to the Pacific. In the 1990s, does various Pacific deployments. Very active ship in the Pacific Ocean. In 2003, she deploys to the Indian Ocean, and in 2010, rescues a hijacked cargo ship off the coast of Somalia. So good, storms aboard, rescues the crew, does a great job. This was documented on video and spread around the internet whenever they did this. There's a lot of video on YouTube of this action if you wanted to look it up. In 2014, she deploys near Australia. And in 2017, she's dried up for modernization. And the following year, while in dry dock, she has a fire that damages some systems. So here's some pictures before the upgrade. In 2015, Russia announced that it would upgrade 5 Utiloids. It would extend the service life 30 years, replace the ASW missile systems with anti-ship missiles. So it's still going to have an ASW role because it has that great horse-drawn sonar, but it's going to lose its primary ASW weapon in exchange for a very capable anti-ship weapon. It's also going to replace one of the 2 turrets on the bow with a VLS launcher. Here is the Marshal Shaporshnikov in dry dock being worked on for many years. This took a long time, but you can see where they took off. One of the turrets is already missing, and the 2 Snowstorm box launchers on the bow are completely ripped out. And here she is in 2021. Credit to Joseph H. Dempsey of Twitter for this photo, where he labels the SAM launcher on the bow is the SAN-9. That's unchanged. Notice the new shape of the 100mm turret on the bow, though. It's more of a stealthy design, lower visibility. But they've installed a caliber complex for VLS on the second turret. So this is, the caliber is essentially a Tomahawk missile. It can do anti-ship, anti-land, very long range, and a proven weapon. They've used this caliber missile in the war in Syria. So it is proven. And they replaced the SSN-14 with the SSN-35 anti-ship missile. All right, Severomorsk is the next Utiloid to be built. In 1984, she's finished in 87. 1988, she's assigned to the Northern Fleet. Through the 90s and 2000s, couldn't find any record of her deployments or port visits, but it is assumed that she was active during those times deploying. In 2017, she completed an Arctic Ocean exercise. In 2018, she was anti-piracy deployment off the Gulf of Aden. That's near Somalia. She has a Mediterranean deployment the next year, and in 2020, she deploys off the coast of Alaska. So she's all over the place. In 2021, the year of this recording, she was a part of the Barents Sea annual summer exercises. Admiral Lechinko was built in 82, laid down in 82, commissioned in 88. These are taking longer and longer to put together, it seems. 1990s to 2000s, no data of her deployments, but she does do the anti-piracy thing in 2010 off coast Somalia. She's part of the Naval Day Parade in St. Petersburg. This is an annual parade that they have there. I believe it's every late July or early August, and she takes part in that. That's where this photo is from. In 2020, she's placed on the inactive list, waiting for modernization to the Utiloid 2. That's what we think will happen to her, but we're not sure yet. That's in progress. She's essentially waiting for dry dock space. Russia recently, in the last year and a half, has lost a major floating dry dock and has had fires in their shipyards, damaging the facilities that ships like this would use to modernize or be upgraded. So she's literally tied to a pier right now, waiting either upgrade, modernization, or decommissioning. We'll see what happens to her. Admiral Vinogradov was laid down in 1986, commissioned in 88. In 1989, she's assigned to the Pacific Fleet. She visits San Diego in 1990, a little goodwill visit there. In 1992, Persian Gulf deployment. 2010, she's doing that anti-piracy thing, Gulf of Aden. And 2019, very recently, she had a near collision with the USS Chancellorville in South China Sea. There you can see the pictures on the left-hand side of our ship conducting helo operations, so a straight and steady course at relatively low speed, when the Russian destroyer comes in, pulls up alongside of her, and goes right by the starboard side. She's currently on active duty in the Pacific Fleet. Admiral Karlamanov She's laid down in 1986, commissioned in 89. She visits Halifax and Boston in 1993. And this is a chance where I had the opportunity to take a day and tour this vessel in Boston. When they pulled in, they were allowing civilians and Naval Academy cadets a tour. And me and my sonar division got permission to pose as Naval Academy students for a day and go on board. They allowed us to walk the weather deck's topside. So I walked this thing stem to stern. You know, I was able to put my hands on the turrets and, you know, touch the chafe launchers. And it was quite a machine. I was really impressed. It's a lot bigger than it appears in these photos. You would be surprised if you were to walk it stem to stern just how large 536 feet are. It is a big boat. So after the Boston visit, she pulls into Rotterdam in 1994. 1996-97, she's a best ASW ship in fleet. So she won that for naval exercises. In 2001, she does another naval exercise, but that was the one where they lost the Kursk. And so she was part of looking for the Kursk and the salvage operation that happened from that. In 2006, she's removed from active service. As of 2019, she's still waiting for dismantle and disposal. In 2020, she's formally decommissioned, so they won't be bringing her back. Admiral Panteleyev is laid down in 1988, commissioned in 1991, and assigned to the Pacific Fleet. In 2009, she's due in anti-piracy deployments. That's very popular between 2009 and 2012. Russia was all over Somalia trying to have a presence in that region of the world, also protecting their shipping. 2012 participated in a U.S.-led RIMPAC exercise. So again, I want to point out 2012, only 9 years ago at the time of this recording, we had pretty good relations with Russia. We were actually working and doing war games together. That is not the case anymore. In 2017, port visit to Manila. And in 2021, she's still active duty in the Pacific Fleet. We could see her at sea today. All right. Admiral Chabanenko is a Utiloi 2 now. Keel's laid in 1989, commissioned in 1999. 2000 was assigned to the Northern Fleet. Sailed the Panama Canal in 2008. In 2009, anti-piracy patrol near Somalia. In 2011, she did joint naval exercises with NATO, go figure. And 2013, dry docked and overhauled. And in 2021, remains in dry dock at Murmansk, Russia today. But that's a picture of her there with the new launchers and the VLS behind the single turret on the bow. So the Utiloi 2 upgrades a little bit different than the Utiloi modernization. She gets the SSN-22 Sunburn anti-ship missile as Mach 3 speeds. It is nuclear capable and has two quad launchers that are forward facing. The gun that's on the bow is a dual barrel gun. So it has, it's an AK-130. It has a 130 millimeter cannon. It's got two of them. They're water cooled and it has a high rate of fire. It has HE shells and armor piercing. It's dual purpose where it can shoot towards incoming missiles and aircraft as well. It has a Zedza M2 sonar system. That's essentially an improved horse jaw sonar system. Its range scale has been increased to 120 kilometers. Its bearing accuracy has been improved to 1.5 degrees of accuracy at 120 kilometers, which is really good. And the variable depth sonar can be dipped down to 400 meters. Very deep for a VDS. You're not going to be getting below that easily. All right, my final thoughts on the Utiloi. The only service USW or ASW vessel that I feared during my service was any ship that had horse jaw sonar on it. And the Utiloi was one of them. The Kirov was the other. Kuznetsov had horse jaw sonar as well, surprisingly. It's just a very capable system. You don't want to get within 16 miles of it because it'll snap your ass up. Luckily for us, we never had to get that close. It's a very fast and reliable ship, as you saw with this brief. Very few incidents of fire or breaking down, or, you know, it operated consistently even after the fall of the Soviet Union. But some of its faults are it's a one-dimensional ship. It kills submarines, and it's very vulnerable to missile attack, ship attack, air attack, so it needs to be escorted. It cannot deploy by itself safely. So you often see this accompanied, like I said, with a Sovremeny or some other escort vessel with an anti-air capability. But it's an absolute icon of the Cold War, even though, you know, it was built and commissioned in the last 5 or 6 years of the Cold War. It was the pinnacle of Soviet ASW surface ship engineering, and very, very capable ship. And with modernization, it can compete in the 21st century. Absolutely. All right, that's the end of the Utiloy sub-brief. I want to say thank you to everybody who supports this project over here. I absolutely love making these. And I want to give a big shout to our highest tier contributors. The department heads are Adam Morgan, Harpoon Henry, JB, Kelly Martin, and William R. Collier Jr. Thank you guys for being so generous. And our division officers too. Alexander Huff, Brendan Ferry, Chappie James, Jason Wang, Jeremy Edwards, Joel Corrent, DJS 4000, Jordan Vazraka, Josh Warnick, Nathan Wilbanks, Robbie Stahl, Scott Borg, and Sean O'Neill. You guys are absolute chads. Thank you very much for supporting what we do here. And don't forget to check out all the other medias. We've launched a Twitch channel this summer and it's really popular. So check out Twitch/Subbrief. And of course, you guys already know that I'm on YouTube. And I appreciate you guys being here. I really could not afford to do this full time without the Patreon side. You guys keep this, you make this a job possible for me. So thank you. As far as I'm concerned, I work for you guys. So let me know what you think and I'll see you in the next one. I have a podcast for you coming up too around the 15th. Okay. I'll see you then. Bye.